There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by guest host Desiree Ellie for podcast number 621, March 21st. 2013. Des?
Hello, listeners. Hello, Clark, host of the program. How are you?
I'm great. On this program, was Kimmy just lucky? Is Charlie Whiting a wussy? And Marussia is kicking some Caterham bootay. Desiree, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am excellent. Don't I look well?
Absolutely. Indubitably. Thanks for coming in, because we know Nasser is in Sepang with GP2 credentials, and he'll be covering that segment of the GP2 opener in beautiful Sepang International Raceway, or I think it's in Kuala Lumpur.
Kuala Lumpur. I love that word.
Exactly. And on this podcast, we'll have a special tech talk. There you have it, Desiree. What did you think of the Australian Grand Prix? But what I really want to talk about is qualifying.
Oh, yes. As Fernando put it, he was very sad that they couldn't do it on the Saturday. Sad for the viewers.
Yeah, well, it began to rain, but I think once Q1 starts, you cannot postpone Q2 or Q3, especially if it's not monsoons. I've seen Formula One race in much worse conditions. Exactly. I think Charlie Whiting has just simply become so safe and so wussy that he should be impeached immediately. That was just not...
put out to pasture, you think?
Well, my biggest problem is some of the best and most exciting F1 is when it's in the wet. This is what separates the men from the TF boys.
Yes,
so,
I know.
I don't know.
The last time qualifying was held off was in Suzuka when... in the early 2000s when they had to do that, but it hasn't been for many, many moons, and you shouldn't derail the train once it's going.
I agree. No, I it took the wind out of my sails, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I was very, very disappointing, but what can you do, huh? And a great qualifying. The only thing that was lackadaisical for me was the postponement, and then on top of that, it was back to the last year front row lockout for Red Bull with Sebastian Vettel on pole. Impressive stuff with Lewis Hamilton taking third spot.
Yes,
I thought that was a great start for me.
Yeah, it's Sebastian's 37th pole, by the way. That's pretty good stats for such a youngster. And Lewis was thrilled with his new team to be getting third.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was very impressive. Mercedes has done a lot of work, and they're doing a fine job, but still outstanding job for Red Bull, Renault. Lotus F1 looked very, very good. Fernando Alonso looking so much better than last year. I believe Felipe Massa qualified 16th in 2012 for the Australian opener. So well done to Ferrari. Everybody's made big progress. And for me, Marussia slapping around Caterham is absolutely stunning. Toro Rosso is pretty much where I expect them to be.
I just worry about those Toro Rosso boys because, their owner, Dietrich, heads will roll if they don't get, better results.
Yeah. And, not only that, but – Once a year, the rumor mill begins that they're going to sell the team. So I'm not sure, but We'll see what happens. Anyway, let's go right to the Grand Prix, since I thought it was a fantastic race, especially for my boys at Lotus F1, Eric Boullier. What an outstanding job they've done over there. And lap one was very impressive, with Kimi Raikkonen making his move down the inside on Lewis Hamilton for fourth. I thought Kimi Raikkonen was very aggressive. And, of course, Fernando Alonso slips down the inside of Lewis Hamilton for third and then puts a pass on his Ferrari teammate, Felipe Massa, for second. Stunning stuff. But the Brazilian fights back. Felipe Massa said, no mas, no mas.
I think we should mention that poor Nico Hülkenberg, he didn't even get to participate in the Grand Prix.
You know, you're right. And for a while, I was scratching my head, but they couldn't get gas in the tank.
You must have gas in the tank. Yes.
Well, I understand people have jitters, there's butterflies, it's the first race of the season, but Sauber, a fairly complete team, professionals, they've got Nico Hülkenberg, they want to impress him with their professionalism, and what happens?
No gas.
No gas, it was like the fuel embargo, 1976. Wow. Jimmy Carter all over again.
I know, I'm back but in my still, plaid pants I used to wear.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, poor Nico, but Gutierrez does a pretty good job starting way, way, way in the back. He had some trouble. He had an accident in Q1, in practice, and he was spinning all over the place. And I believe he did spin in Q1, and they were lucky to put that together. But still, on lap four, Sergio Perez, and everybody's watching Sergio over at McLaren. Sergio Perez is having a great race. He's up to 11th, having started from 15th. And Jenson Button is forced to pit for fresh tires on lap four.
Oh, he's disgusted with this car. What? He hates this car already.
Really?
He's a nice boy. He doesn't down talk. You know, he's not like the bad boy like Lewis was. But he said that the car is it can't win a race how it is.
Well, I think it's not only that, but the car has to manage these fragile, soft tires from Pirelli.
And Button is the tire massager. He's the one that can smooth operator, you know. He is always cleaning his tires.
What happened there?
It's the car.
Well, it's not just him. Lap five, Mark Webber has to stop for tires while Vettel is getting reeled in by two Ferraris. And Kimi Raikkonen, casual, in fourth, he is the man to watch, obviously, in hindsight. But still, impressive start for everybody. I thought Felipe Massa was holding off Fernando very, very well in the first few laps of the race. On lap eight, Sebastian Vettel pits for tires because these things are completely shredding so fast. He rejoins in P11 behind our friend Pastor Maldonado. And you know what? I know the Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez died, but I mean, come on, Pastor. You've got to get over it, because this is probably one of the worst performances I have seen in a race from somebody in a top team. I mean, do we blame Williams? Do we blame Pastor? Do we blame Hugo Chavez?
Rest in peace. Yes.
I know.
Yeah, and everyone, these Pirellis, they did it on purpose. They wanted to get a lot of action going, a lot of moving and shaking. So they made these tires out of what, tissue paper or something? Because like Alonso had to pit as well. Then right after Vettel pitted, then Massa pits, and this is just a few laps into the race. That's not even racing when you. This is like getting off and on an exit on the freeway.
I agree. Obviously, it's starting to look like Mercedes are trying to go for a two-stop strategy, while the likes of Red Bull and Ferrari look like they're on a three-stopper. Lap 12, Sergio Perez is going backwards here. The McLaren is in big trouble. Felipe Massa, Fernando Alonso, and Kimi Raikkonen all pass the Mexican from, I believe, Monterrey. I can't remember. It could have been Guadalajara. Not sure. Jenson Button. Jenson Button, meanwhile, is two places behind in 10. Very impressive. On lap 14, Lewis Hamilton dives into the pits for a set of medium tires. He made it last till 14. Pretty impressive. Nico Rosberg is now leading the pack.
Woo!
Oh, it was wonderful. Absolutely wunderbar.
at that point, yeah. He leaves it for one lap, I guess, and then he has to pit.
Yeah. Well, Rosberg gets on the radio and says he's suffering from massive understeer. And, of course, one of our favorites of this particular race is the welcome back Cotter boy himself, Adrian Sutil, who's down doing an outstanding job making his tires last, but... No, I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, he got in some legal trouble, you know, in the last year, and he's had to make good on himself now, change his image. I think the bad boy image might have helped him, actually.
I agree. I think Adrian Sutil stays on the medium set of tires and does an outstanding job, very impressive, and Paul DeRosa now knows that he better watch it because his cage could get rattled.
Sutil had to keep Vettel behind him.
Exactly. That's what was so good, and I think that helped out Ferrari because with Fernando and Massa stuck behind Vettel, and then Vettel stuck behind Adrian Sutil, it was a beautiful thing if you're a Ferrari fan. So there you have it. Lap 20, Fernando Alonso makes the call to pit for a set of mediums. He rejoins behind Mercedes' Nico Rosberg, and that puts him in seventh, while Vettel has dropped back from leader Adrian Sutil's Force India. Not sure if he was getting away from the dirty air, but that's what is going on. Lap 25, Adrian Sutil sets the fastest lap of the race in sixth place, and he keeps hold of the back of Sebastian Vettel's Red Bull. I thought that it was pretty impressive, especially for somebody who almost didn't get this job. It looked like it was going to go to Jules Bianchi, but at the last minute, boom, the millions of dollars he gets from sponsorship convinced Force India and Vijay Mallya and all his bills to take him on. And Jules Bianchi, luckily, very talented driver, as we know Nasser loves, has a drive at Marussia.
Yes. I think Vettel got around Sutil because Sutil, I think, was trying not to make – before this all happened, Sutil was trying not to make any mistakes, trying to be a little bit cautious. Exactly. What about poor Massa's pit? Here's where this happens. Massa got pulled into the pits, and it just screwed him.
Well, listen, he's the number two. I didn't see any monkey business. All I know is Fernando leapfrogs, and that's the way it is. I mean, you know, what can you do? Felipe Massa does get a great run on lap 21 on Adrian Sutil down in turn 3, but he sensibly backs out of it, realizing a couple of raindrops are coming down. But in fact, that was just spit or something, because really rain really appeared. Lap 30, Kimi Raikkonen now is leading by 13.4 seconds from Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso, who are third. And Sebastian Vettel, fourth. Adrian Sutil, Felipe Massa, Paul DeRosa, Mark Webber, Daniel Ricciardo, Jenson Button complete the top 10 on lap 30. So very impressive. I thought the Toro Rosso's were doing really good. On lap 34, Daniel Ricciardo just set the fastest lap of the race on Super Sops with a 1:31.330. The Australian is down to 13th, though, 11 seconds adrift from McLaren.
He racked it in pits at this time for his second and last pit stop.
Exactly. And he knows everybody's going to suffer. He started the race on the softs. Now he's on the mediums, his second set of mediums. I mean, his set. Excuse me. But no, very impressive how well, because, you know, I don't think of Kimi Raikkonen as being a smooth operator, especially when I remember him in the days of McLaren.
Yeah, he's the king of, like, you know, correcting from, he likes oversteer, you know, and he likes to wiggle the steering wheel around everything. But, he was like Jensen. He was channeling Jensen's skills there.
Absolutely. Lap 38, Sebastian Vettel pits for a fresh set of boots, and he rejoins in fifth place behind Lewis Hamilton ahead of Senor Massa.
Yeah, so he went for his third pit at that point. Gosh, man.
Well, at this point, I'm already coming to the conclusion that Kimi Raikkonen is going to stretch these out till the end, and nobody else can. It was outstanding Lap 43, Lewis Hamilton does indeed make a third stop, choosing the medium tires, and Mercedes driver rejoins in sixth, just in front of the Toro Rosso of Jean-Éric Vergne, who's doing a pretty good job, and he needs to do a great job. And, of course, up front, Kimi Raikkonen in the lead again with an outstanding move on Adrian Sutil, who still has to make another stop. So it didn't work out. I think Force India had the right idea, but the timing was off, and Kimi Raikkonen showed him who the master is.
Yeah, the team for Adrian, they were radioing him saying, do not waste time on Raikkonen, you know, like just give that up, give that thought
exactly,
up.
Exactly, which is a smart thing to do, because then you're going to lose time and degradate your tires even further. So a very impressive stuff. I really, really enjoyed the final laps of this race. On lap 46, Fernando Alonso finally makes a move and makes a stake on Adrian Sutil and rises up into second place. Fernando always on the podium, always on the podium, always on the podium. Super dependable. I thought Fernando and Felipe Massa both did a great job. Ferrari really impressive compared to last year's Australian Grand Prix.
Oh, yeah. I think we should mention there were some retirements, though. Daniel Ricciardo, he went in with some broken exhaust components, so he was a DNF. Nico Rosberg DNF'd.
Yeah, and stopped on the track.
Yeah, yep. And then, of course, Pastor.
Yeah, again, you know what? I had already mocked Pastor so much at the beginning of the program that I just didn't want to mention it again.
Yeah, Nico looked pretty sad because he was, you know, he retired kind of early on in the race, and he was pretty racy.
He was pretty competitive.
He was sad, I think.
You think he teared up a little bit?
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, poor guy.
His mascara rant was running, I could tell.
Yeah, he's a little feminine, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Fernando Alonso almost smashes into the back of one of them Geetrums when he loses control of his Ferrari on lap 55. It was pretty hilarious. I don't know what happened there, but Caterham. You know, what I don't understand about Caterham is, let's see, we got Red Bull Renault, we got Lotus Renault, and we got Williams Renault, which I don't even want to mention right now. But Caterham is at the bottom of the field. I mean, they are sucking eggs, and they have got a great motor package. I'm just not sure why they're not firing people and getting this team reorganized.
Yeah, they need some work. It's their arrow, I think. It's not there.
I totally agree. It's a disaster, and I can't stand it anymore. Anyway, quickly, McLaren's Sergio Perez, he's trying really bad to pass Romain Grosjean for that final point.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen. Romain Grosjean holds him off. Kimi Raikkonen wins this Grand Prix. An outstanding job by Fernando Alonso, and we've got Sebastian Vettel finishing out the top three. We've got a podium of three world champions. Pretty exciting.
Exciting. And Kimi got fastest lap right at the end there. He saw Fernando in his rearview mirrors, and he thought, well, I better get the fastest.
It was glorious. I mean, Kimi said that, but come on. There's had to be some giggling. He's got these tires that have been on the car for like 24 laps, and he goes, you know what? Just to irk them a little bit, we'll throw in the fast lap. Bada bing, bada boom.
Yes, that's his 38th fastest lap, and now he's three behind Alain Prost's record.
Wow. I'm glad you have all these stats, because I know nothing, I see nothing.
You know, I'm the technical one, there we go. And so when Kimi did win, he was about 12 seconds or so ahead of Alonso, and then came Vettel, and then came Massa, poor Massa. But yeah, so 12 seconds, he put the pedal to the metal, and it was a definitive win. Woohoo!
It was a great win for Lotus, but let's not forget, 3 years ago, we had a young man by the name of Nick Heidfeld who got a phone call from Eric Boullier to replace Robert Kubica. They go to Australia, and Nick Heidfeld is on the podium, and everybody's happy at Lotus F1, and from then on, it was a disaster, and Nick Heidfeld was a disaster. The team got nothing, and everything went downhill. So let's hope they don't get that kind of scenario happening.
Don't even jinx them, you.
I'm not a jinxer.
Better go to the church.
I'm a developer.
So, yes.
No, it's fantastic. Anyway, let's quickly talk about Malaysia before we put the interview on with Adrian Schwartzberg.
Well, can I go to the podium for 1 second just because it was so glorious? Kimi was smiling. actually smiling. I saw Vettel and Alonso clinking, you know, champagne bottles. It was a bro fest.
Yeah.
It was.
And what I liked about the podium is Raikkonen, the smart guy that he is, before he did any spraying or anything, it's up to the mouth and let's start guzzling.
That's his standard procedure. It's like he was going to almost spray, but then he goes, oh, no, I need to drink first because everyone's expecting it. And we do expect it.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So, you know what? I'm hoping that everything is good. Of course, Kimi telling the team, I told you we had a good car, and he knows everything, and don't tell me what to do and all that. So, and did you notice that there was very little radio conversation between the team and Kimi this time?
Did like one radio that we heard, and it was, you know, like kind of they were almost apologetic while they were radioing him, and they're going to keep it like that.
Exactly.
He knows what he's doing.
Excuse me, Kimi. You know, and then they go, what was the temperature you like your Finlandia at?
Shall we go over who got the top 10?
Yes, please.
Okay, well, it's Kimi Raikkonen in first, then Fernando Alonso in second, Sebastian Vettel in third, Felipe Massa fourth, Lewis Hamilton in fifth with his new team of Mercedes. Sixth was Webber. Seventh was Adrian Sutil. Eighth was Paul DiResta. Ninth was Jenson Button, who had won the previous year. Sorry. And tenth was Romain Grosjean.
Keep up the good work, Romain. I thought everybody did a great job. I'm looking forward to Malaysia, where Nasser is at right now in his Bermuda shorts, probably on the beach.
Yes, I'm so thrilled for Lotus. They haven't won a season opener since 1978.
1978, Lotus. That would be Mario Andretti.
Wow.
I know.
I hope he was watching the race. I'm sure he was.
He was probably there.
Oh, I hope so. And Kimi, you said it was like a day in the park for him. It was easy to save his tires. His car was a good car in the easiest race he's won in a while.
So we'll see what happens. I'm not sure. I haven't checked the weather for Malaysia, but it's going to be interesting. But it's going to be tough for everybody. The heat, the tires could be even worse than in Australia. It should be absolutely fascinating.
It'll be a sweaty time for sure.
Any predictions?
No, I don't like to do predictions because it makes a dick out of you and I.
Well, no. I predict all the time. And this time, this weekend, it will be Fernando Alonso, P1.
I can see that. Fernando, he's like such an ambassador for the sport now that since he's been to Ferrari and, you know, they speak Italian to him and he's like talking to the fans, I'm sorry for the fans, I'm sad for the fans. And he's like, he got his own applause getting in second. He's like, thank you. He is the voice of F1, I think, of the drivers.
Absolutely. So anyway, thanks for helping us out with Nasser out. When he travels, you'll be doing the guest hosting duties.
Always a pleasure. And always a pleasure to talk to you, listeners.
Exactly. So anyway, here we go. Our Motorsports Mondial segment, Tech Talk.
Hey, F1 Weekly Familia. This is Tim here on assignment. With me today is Cecilia La Rosa of the Stanford Structures and Composites Laboratory. Cecilia, would you like to tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
Hi, Tim. Yes. Hi, everyone. So I'm a fifth-year PhD student at Stanford. I've been working with composites since, I don't know, I can't remember. And I worked from sports equipment made out of composites to making a prototype of a spaceship. So that's basically a huge background on composites.
And would you like to tell the listeners where you're from?
Oh, sorry. I'm originally from Uruguay. I moved here 11 years ago, and so I'm a big fan of soccer, or the real football, what I would call it. Maybe not that.
Great. So, Cecilia, what steps do you take to fabricate a structure, such as an airplane wing or race car monocoque from carbon composites?
So, the way composites are made, they're constituents. You have plies or lamina, which are basically, if you think about like your the sheets on one of your notebooks, and then what you have to do is put all those little sheets together, stack them up, and then what you have to do is cook them or bake them. So the material, the glue that's putting them together, so you glue them together, and the process to do that is actually you have to put them in an oven or an autoclave, which is a pressurized oven, so that you actually put pressure and temperature so you actually can make a very strong and consolidated material. The way you make a complicated part such as a car parts, you actually have to have a mold, some sort of mold that has the shape, and then you actually lay each of these plies on top of each other against the mold, okay? And once you have that, those layers put together in the places that you want, then you actually cover it with a vacuum bag, and a vacuum port. So the vacuum is basically the idea of, some people use the vacuum from your house, and you pull on all the air in between the mold and the bag so that it pushes down the material against the mold. And that way, you keep it like that, it pushes on, you can put it in an oven, so that the oven puts pressure, and what we call cooking the material. You cook or bake the material for as long as it takes for the material to harden and get strong.
Very neat. So what makes a composite structure lightweight and strong compared to materials like aluminum?
So basically the whole idea of having these plies or laminates or little sheets that you put together is that you can actually orient them at its specific orientation. So if you know that, say, you're gonna take the load at a specific direction, right? So what you're gonna do, you're gonna design that to you design your composite so that you can actually align the material, each of these plies, in a specific way so that you have actually an optimized structure that is very strong in the direction that you want and thinner. So what makes it really good is that it's thinner, it's stronger, and also the material properties of composites is that it doesn't corrode as much, and it's a lot less dense than metals. So you have a combined high-performance material for a long life and light, so means that you will use less fuel for airplanes or cars.
Well, that sounds perfect. So how come if I want to go buy a car made out of carbon composites, it's so outrageously expensive?
So as I said, you have to lay, it's a manual process because you actually, if you go to a car manufacturer, which I have, you actually have big, big molds that have to go into big ovens. And that's not just the part that is expensive. The part that really is expensive is that it's a manual process. So it's really hard to automate streamline the process. And so it takes a lot of time, a lot of labor time, because you have to put each of those plies or sheets against each other, and you will usually have, if you think about a hood of a car, you have at least two or three people working to try to lay that out. So it really is expensive, not because it's a cool and new material, but it really is expensive from the manufacturing side point of view. Making the parts is really expensive from just the time that it takes to make them.
All right, well, thank you very much. I hope that all the listeners have gained a good understanding of carbon composite structures and what their strengths and benefits are. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.